Everybody, quick content warning for a discussion of suicide in this episode.
Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show where we talk about Fallout. I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael.
We're talking about Fallout 3 today. We're talking about Rivet City. Meet me tonight in Rivet City.
if only these games had like pop songs, like in-world like folk songs or something, right? Unfortunately, all cultural production ceased when the bombs fell.
It is absolute trash that New Vegas has the king, but none of these games have the boss. How did they make Fallout 4 not have the boss somewhere in there?
I don't know. It's a mystery. Speaking of Fallout 4, this episode is the entire, like, this entire episode will cover the hook for Fallout 4.
It's true. It's almost as if they were like, could we take one quest and make it a whole game?
Yeah.
It's very much a Bart SZ moment.
How big can you blow a thing up? It's like very much a Bart Simpson moment.
It is. You know, very much a bunch of eat my shorts. Don't have a cow, man. It's one of those. No. Okay. So we're in Rivet City. Rivet City is a settlement built in a aircraft carrier. And that's it. The end.
Yep. That's it. That's also the quest, is just knowing that. Knowing is half the battle.
So the reason that we came to Rivet City is, main quest-wise, is that your papa is here. Or that we know that your papa has traveled here. I got here, I went and talked to Dr. Lee, who I was told to talk to about my papa. She told me a few important facts. She said, number one, I used to research with your mama and papa. We were hanging out in the Jefferson Memorial, doing cool stuff. Working on a thing called Project Purity to make all the water in the Capital Wasteland good and not full of radiation. You were born. Your mama died. Your father left. I mean, your papa. He left. No one, the Brotherhood of Steel then no longer wanted to protect us at the Jefferson Memorial doing the research, and so I had to abandon it. Now I'm here doing ...
And she's making non-irradiated potatoes.
Oh, is that true?
Yes, it's 100% true. In her lab, it's like filled with a bunch of like potatoes and carrots, like stuff out of Oblivion or Skyrim, that is not irradiated.
Well, cool. I mean, shout out to that. But yes, yeah, so that's the basic idea. And she says, if you want to learn more about your papa, because he came here, we did see him recently. If you want to learn more about your papa, you must go to the Jefferson Memorial. To which I said, nah. This episode's about Rivet City. But luckily there's a little quest giver in here. In this very same room.
There is?
Yeah. Oh. I met Mr. Zimmer here. Room with Dr. Lee.
So, I think you and I had very different experiences of this quest. So I'll let you go first.
I'll tell you where we... I'll start laying it out to you, and you tell me where we sync up. How about that?
Okay, well, I'll tell you. This is where the quest ends for me.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right, so I talked to Dr. Lee, and I can overhear this guy, Mr. Zimmer, complaining in the background. And he's hooting and hollering and having a bad time. And so I go up to talk to him and say, what is your problem, monsieur? And he says, hey... I'm from the Commonwealth. We're up north. He says, do you know what a robot is? Anyway, he explains to me that basically there are synthetic human beings running around in the world. That there are robots that look like humans, think they're humans, and they get out sometimes, and it's bad. And I said, now hang on, Buster. This sounds like slavery to me, and I don't care for it. And he says, and this is a quote, can you enslave a generator? Can you enslave, you know, some other robot thing? So he's having none of it. And he says, look, I'll give you some money. Here's a holotape. let me give you some money. This this robot has been roasted me from afar with this. He's been bragging that he escaped me. And you listen to the holotape, and the holotape says, "Damn, I'm a robot. I've escaped. I have to accomplish two things to truly escape. One will be to get facial reconstruction surgery.
Mm-hmm.
The other will be to wipe my memory so that I will have no memory of being a robot or being enslaved. And so if I change my face and I get rid of my memories, then I'll be able to be free."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Cool. Okay. That's interesting." He says, "So you're going to help me find this guy?" And I said, "Sure. I'll help you find him." Now, in my head, in Tonk's little bean brain, Tonk thinks, "No way. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to finagle this in some way as to not turn this over because I think it's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think that this robo-human should be enslaved by this complete jackass." However, this complete jackass also has a buddy with him. Did you see this buddy at any point?
I did see the buddy, yes.
Armitage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get it? Do you get the reference?
Armitage?
Yeah.
To They Live.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's not what I mean, it is to They Live, I guess. But weird that we've talked about They Live so much recently. Mm-hmm. But no, I think it's a reference to Neuromancer.
Oh, see, my Armitage for me is not actually They Live. I go to Lovecraft, because that's the name of the protagonist of The Dunwich Horror. Mm-hmm. Which is where, like, that's why Armitage is in They Live. That's Carpenter mm-hmm. referencing Lovecraft. But anyway, mm-hmm. continued. Let's talk about Neuromancer.
Yeah, I think it's a Neuromancer because their commander is a, spoilers for Neuromancer, I mean, it's not really spoilers, but he is a mind-wiped, mind-overridden former soldier who is like half robot at this point. He's like a reconstructed soldier.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, this guy's like a mercenary. He's got that look about him. So I think it's a Neuromancer reference, but it might not. I don't know. Could be an elaborate Dunwich Horror reference.
It's unlikely, I think.
Is that in the Commonwealth? It would have to be, right?
Actually, yes, it would be.
Well, you know, there you go. But yeah, so I talked to that fellow and said I would do that, and I went off on my way. He says, "You should talk to doctors and techies, because doctors and techies are going to know about these things."
Oh, now, doctors and techies. I mm-hmm. thought you were talking about a character named Dr. Zentechies. And I was like, I didn't meet this person.
Yeah, Dr. Zentechies. That's my other character I've been playing this whole time. But no, so doctors and techies. So I go talk to the doctor in River City, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't have anything for you, bud." And then I go talk to the doctor in Megaton, because I remembered you mentioning that you found a holotape there, and I found a holotape there that says, you know, he's looking for someone to mind wipe him. Then I went and talked to Mora, and because she's a techie, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives me a little bit more information, and then something else happens that kind of short circuits the quest. So why don't you tell me how it went for you in the beginning?
Yeah, so ages and ages ago, back after I think like the point when we had done Agatha's song and I had run out of all of my stim packs and all of my ammo, and I just started playing in between recording sessions in order to like build up caps and things like that. At one point I went to the doctor in Megaton and I was looking for, like, I think I bought all of the stim packs that he was selling at that point, and then I started like scrounging around his, like, you know, home looking for stim packs that I could maybe steal. Mm-hmm. And in the process, I found this holotape that he had on his desk that you just mentioned, where it's, you know, this synthetic person talking about how he needs to do the facial reconstruction surgery and all that stuff. And that's when I actually started this quest. That's what activated this quest for me, the replicated man. And so sort of incidentally, if only because I have at various points forgotten that this quest was active, I have asked, like, for instance, I have asked Moira about this and gotten some information. And I had talked to some people in Rivet City in the previous episode and gotten some, specifically, like, Seagrave Holmes had told me something about this. And the problem here is that I have not been retaining almost any of this information. Because it's not a quest that I am doing, but the quest keeps happening as I am doing other things. And so I am when I get to Rivet City, this particular time, I'm, you know, walking around, I'm getting acquainted with things, I'm meeting people, because this is how I treat every new location in Fallout, is I'm like trying to meet everyone and talk to everyone and get a sense for places. And as I'm doing this, I'm like walking up some sets of stairs, and I step outside, and I am immediately locked into a conversation with this NPC named Victoria Watts, who starts harassing me for reasons that I don't quite understand. And I think it's because I've talked to Seagrave Holmes, but she's like, you know, you better stop like asking questions about that synthetic person. Like, you know, basically like she's, you know, calling me a slave catcher or something. And I'm like, hey, hold up. Like, that's not at all what I was up to here. Eventually she explains, you know, like she's part of this this group called the Railroad, that basically just gets synthetic people out of the Commonwealth and, like, you know, is freeing them essentially from slavery. And mm-hmm. she insists to you, right, that this synthetic, right, this android is human. It is a person. You know, it's a very weird, like, conversation, because she's just like insisting really, really hard that it's a person. And even if he is just a machine, he also has feelings and so on and so forth. And none of this is particularly controversial to me or to Eleanor. But it's just literally like I walked through a door and this woman started yelling this stuff at me. And then she, and I'm like, hey, hold up. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm not really against you here. Like, I'm fine. Like, whatever. I'm just asking questions because I heard about this, I guess. And she gives me a part of an android that I guess will prove that the android has died, even though it hasn't, right? The android has gone into hiding, but this is like, you know, this is like presenting part of the corpse or something that should suggest that the android has been destroyed or something. So that all happens. And so then when I first walk into the lab to talk to Dr. Lee, I walk into Dr. Zimmer, and he's complaining to Dr. Lee's assistant, and I kind of get some information there. It's basically the same information that you just talked about, except when I first talked to him, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you're looking for this android. Well, he's apart from it. It's dead. And then he leaves, and that's the end of the quest. So, like, this feels very Fallout 1 and 2 to me, because the quest just ends up feeling absolutely incoherent. Because, like, that's over. That's it. That's the quest.
Yeah, that's how I did the quest too. I had the same conversation with her, and like, I went and looked later, and there are two other options, which is you find the android and you like help him out, and then the other option, which is you turn him in.
Yeah.
But that seems woefully, like, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. Other than like to see additional content, right? Which is not a sufficient answer to me in playing a video game. Mm-hmm. Like, this is such an easy and convenient way out of like everyone getting what they want. The you know, slave catching dude leaves. He's no longer looking for the robot. The synthetic man is still here. He's alive. Right. A+, everyone wins. I don't understand.
Yeah. And like that's it. And as we said at the beginning of the episode, from here, Bethesda builds out like the entirety of the concept of Fallout 4.
Yeah, so a huge part of Fallout 4 is the Commonwealth, which is where it takes place, right? The Boston area, the Institute, which is kind of like future MIT, and then the Railroad, which is its own like faction in that game. So yeah, 100%. There's like so much of that there. Yeah, I wish there was a little bit more to this in a general sense. I did ask Victoria Watts if I could be part of the Railroad, and she says, you know what, if you can hand that thing over, you can consider yourself part of the Railroad, an active member. So I guess I'm doing that now.
Yeah.
I'm part of the Railroad, implicitly and explicitly. It is interesting. I mean, playing this made me think a lot about, because, right, I'm working on a book on science fiction and games, and so I've been thinking about these things. I've been like, going back and playing Bioshock Infinite for some reason. You know, just thinking about kind of science fiction over the past, you know, 20 years or so in video games. And it's interesting to me that, you know, in Isaiah Lavender's book, race in American science fiction. He talks about how, and this is a common kind of race studies in science fiction argument, that racial oppression gets abstracted within science fiction quite often, right? So it becomes about, rather than racial oppression, right? So slavery, as it historically exists in the United States, of whites enslaving, you know, Africans and people of African descent. Rather than that, right, it gets abstracted into a structural position of, you know, humans enslaving robots, right, or whatever, humans enslaving aliens, that kind of thing. What's interesting to me is, like, this is, like, the most core example you can show of that. And it's even more interesting, right, because Victoria Watts is a black woman. So there obviously seems to be some kind of awareness here, but, you know, much like Fallout 1 and 2, where we talked about how race shows up in that, in the sense that it doesn't show up in that, other than kind of like anti-Chinese sentiment or whatever. Race also, to my mind, doesn't really show up in Fallout 3. And so it's interesting how they play this very political kind of quest out, right? That is about you thinking about slavery and if people should be enslaved. Seems pretty political to me. And but then use the robot question to abstract that away from like any real world way that that happens. So, you know, it's an interesting quest, but like you, I took the shorter way out. If you have reasons why we shouldn't have done that, please let us know in the comments. What else do you do here, Michael?
So I talked to the woman who runs like kind of the, it's called like the Weatherly Arms or something. It's like the local hotel, like residential hotel or something. And she told me about this guy named Mr. Lopez who goes to the top of the ship and hangs out all the time. And I tried talking to him and he was very depressed. And he was like, you know, he said something like, you don't know me. Most people don't. And that was it. So and I vaguely remembered this. You can go to the top of the tippy top of the ship, all the way up to the observation tower or whatever. And he shows up there and contemplates suicide.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like he's contemplating jumping off, and you can talk to him. And in traditional Fallout fashion, you can either talk him down from this or you can like urge him to do it. And I talked him down, although, again, it's weird and incoherent. My dialogue options assumed I knew more about Mr. Lopez than I did. Apparently his family died and he couldn't save them. I don't know when I was supposed to learn that or how. I just suddenly knew it and I could talk to him about it and like basically say, you didn't save your family, so you deserve to die, or, you know, some other like inverse of that. Anyway, I told him, of course, what, you know, always works with people in this situation, which is that actually, you know, suicide is the coward's way out, and that he needs to stick around and be a father figure for a guy named Ted Strayer, who is an NPC on this ship who just like said like mean things to me. I don't know his deal, but like this was enough for Mr. Lopez. He was like, you're right. I should guide Ted and be his father figure, even though I think Ted is like a fully functioning adult in so far as this world is concerned. But I got good karma for that. And Mr. Lopez didn't die. So great.
Mr. Lopez, you need to be the father figure for this 45-year-old man.
Right?
This 45-year-old construction worker.
There was that. And, I mean, there were a bunch of other NPCs that I ran into, but nothing really constellated out from them. They're just people who live here. Like, there's, like, a mean little boy, and then his mean mom. I already mentioned in, I think possibly the previous episode, but maybe also this episode, because they're both about Rivet City. Like there's a church, St. Monica's church, and, I could go to church services for St. Monica's if I wanted to. Eleanor has no time for that. She is a scientist's daughter. So, not gonna spend a lot of time in church.
Is she a kind of a grand watchmaker kind of scientist daughter, or is she like a new atheism scientist daughter?
She's definitely a watchmaker. Eleanor is a watchmaker.
Yes. The only NPC that I thought was like super notable here that I dealt with is I forget the name of the person, but they're at the end of one of the hallways and their door is always locked. And I just happened to be standing there when they were inside their door and coming out. And the bark that they gave me was, "Hey, you want to do some jet?" And so then I walked into their room.
Yeah.
And there's just drugs everywhere.
Oh, I ran into this guy. I ran into him in the market, I think. I don't remember his name, but it was very funny to me because he's like, you know, I think he maybe either works in the market or he just, you know, walks around the market as part of his routine. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Man, I could really use some jet." And I was like, "Yeah, sure. You know, here you go. Here's some jet." And then I got negative karma for it.
Wow.
Yeah, which is, it's so funny, like,
moralizing.
Right, it shows how weird the moralizing of this game is, because I am literally, like, just walking around with pockets full of drugs. Like, that is, like, I use drugs in combat, right? Eleanor, like, if there's a big fight coming up, she's gonna eat some jet, she's gonna take some psycho or whatever, and there's no karma penalty associated to owning, selling, collecting, or using drugs. But the second this guy asks for it and you give it to him, then you get negative karma.
Well, it's like the libertarian paradise that is the Bethesda game, right? Uh-huh. Like, you can do whatever you want. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you as a human being, you have the property of your own body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have individualism. You can accrue as much property as you want, as long as it doesn't impinge on the property rights of other like, living human beings, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute that you cause harm to someone else by giving them jet, that's on you, Buster. And the unseen, all-knowing God of the marketplace that gives karma, you're going to get dinged on that one.
It reminds me of, this is just like a looking forward thing, right? But it makes me think of how drugs end up getting handled in Skyrim, which is really interesting because, like, so the drugs there are, you know, moon sugar and skooma. Mm-hmm. And in previous games, I'm not sure exactly what happened in Oblivion, but I know that, like, in Morrowind, you would take a drug and it would give you some kind of stat boost, but also a kind of penalty. And also by holding that stuff, certain merchants wouldn't do business with you, right? That was one of the ways that sort of the illicit nature of the drug trade was modeled. But by the time you get to Skyrim, like anyone will do business with, like, so in the world, right, these drugs are still illegal technically. But anyone will do business with you if you're carrying them. And also, like, their effects are just, like, it temporarily gives you a boost to stamina. But everyone will talk about how awful and dangerous skooma is and what it's like to be a skooma addict. But it's like, no, this just gives me, like, 25 stamina for 5 minutes or something, right? It's the equivalent of eating 5 pieces of honeycomb.
It's delicious,
right? But like,
and good for you.
But this is I don't know. It's interesting how how incoherent or like how kind of confused and uncertain and ambivalent, I think, the let's say the procedural rhetoric surrounding drug use in these games gets or is. So
yeah, they just don't care. You right. know, at the end of the day, I think that's it, right? Like, these are. What's cool about drugs in Bethesda games at one point, what a sentence,
uh-huh.
But what's interesting about them, right, is exactly what you're saying, that they have an effect on the world, mm-hmm. And as Bethesda games have continued, right, the world doesn't exist, you know, in the way, it is a Thatcherian paradise in which society does not exist. It isn't yeah. just a bunch of agents running around doing things. You know, as long as you're not hurting someone else, you can do whatever you want. You can eat, you know, you can drink as much mead as you want to, right? And it's not going to matter. You can do as much skooma as you want. And I think ultimately, right, this is why this style of game has become less and less interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we did the Morrowind stream earlier this year, and people can check those videos out. I'll probably link them at the in the little clippy thing at the end of this video. But we did that Morrowind stream, and like so much of Morrowind is absolutely rad as hell because of the amount of weird bad friction that is put in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And Fallout 3 still has some of that, but eventually they, you know, Bethesda has moved to a frictionless universe of like atoms pinging around.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's just not that interesting to me. But that's all to say, there's another quest that we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
We now interrupt this radio broadcast.
Hi everyone, my name is Hypo, and I'm a Ranged Touch community member. I've really been enjoying Too Much Future, so much so that I've been playing along with the podcast releases for Fallout 3. The other day, I suggested a new segment to Cameron and Michael on the Discord server, and they asked if I'd like to do it myself. I said sure, so here I go. Michael and Cameron have brought it up before, but Fallout 3 and its first-person perspective in a three-dimensional world offers a new opportunity for its designers, environmental storytelling. Not that 1 and 2 were incapable of this, but the size and scope of 3 lets its designers indulge in all kinds of new stories, and tell a lot more of them. Now the world is full of all kinds of different stories. Small stories, not told in words, but incidental item placements and implications of meaning. These are stories that many players may never see, or may never look twice at, or may never forget. I believe that these little environmental stories largely fall into two categories that I will explain in just a moment. And with that, I now present to you the Skeleton Tidbit. The first type of these stories I have categorized under the umbrella term sad skeletons. Sad skeletons are little moments that struck me in some kind of melancholy moving way. Somber moments, brought on by a detail in the game environment. The sad skeleton for this week can be found in the town of Minefield. There are many sad skeletons in this town, but this one stands out. It's in one of the locked homes that are scattered throughout the town. On the second floor, in the master bedroom, there are two skeletons. They lie on their bed, holding each other in a bicentennial embrace. On one of the nightstands, there is a platter with two syringes of Med-X. When the sky fell, perhaps they chose to use that Med-X to go to peaceful sleep in each other's arms one final time, before the radiation could take them. The other category of these stories is called toilet skeletons. Toilet skeletons are the exact opposite of sad skeletons. They're the bizarro universe version of that last story. They're just silly, nonsense, environmental stuff that is so common in Bethesda games. They may not inspire thoughtful melancholia, but boy howdy, aren't they just so goofy. The toilet skeleton for this week isn't actually a skeleton at all. It's a teddy bear in a toilet. He's just hanging out in the dirty, radioactive toilet bowl, playing with a little toy car. Funny, right? It actually took me forever to remember where this was in the game, because it seemed so out of place. I remembered it being in one of the subway tunnel bathrooms, or a raider hideout, which seems ripe for a toilet skeleton like this. But nope, it's actually in Agatha's home. Why would you do that, Agatha? You just ruined two perfectly good toys. How'd you even get plumbing out there anyway? Well, thank you for joining me for this new segment, the Skeleton Tidbit. Off I go!
Yeah, you go down into Rivet City and you find the Capital Preservation Society.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this place?
They sure do have a lot of posters.
Uh-huh.
That's what I thought. I thought, you know, they sure do have a bunch of other junk
mm-hmm.
that is useless to me. And Abraham Washington's a funny name.
Mm-hmm. It is. Did you read any of the terminals that give, like, Abraham Washington's write-up on United States history?
No, I did not. What does that say?
Oh, so Abraham Washington is a guy who lives in Rivet City, and he runs the Capital Preservation Society, which he understands as, you know, preserving the history of the United States and what this country was and what it might be in the future. And it's, you know, it's a museum. And he has, like... the Constitution or something. He has a copy of the Gettysburg Address. All of these things that have been scavenged out of the Capitol wasteland. And you can read on his terminal, like his descriptions of these things. And when we talk about Fallout, one of the recurring questions we've come to is this issue of Fallout and satire. I don't think that this is satire, but it is pretty funny. Basically, Abraham Washington writes about all of these things, like in relation to Abraham Lincoln, and how, so, like, you know, he of course, like, the Emancipation Proclamation, which we are told ended slavery forever, you know, just there's no more slavery, except if you look at the text of that 13th Amendment, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you walk outside in the Fallout 3 world and see, I don't know, all the slavers in the DLC directly dedicated to slavery in Pittsburgh. Interesting.
So, so there's that. But anyway, there's this constant thing where every description, even like he has the Monroe Doctrine, right? Somehow, I guess the Monroe Doctrine is a specific piece of paper. But he has his description of that, and he talks about how even though Monroe was, you know, not as cool or as charismatic as Lincoln, he nevertheless had a doctrine, and so on and so forth. And the Gettysburg Address, of course, is all about how great Lincoln was, as well as the Emancipation Proclamation. The Constitution sort of looks forward to Lincoln. And then he also has the declaration of war against China that precipitated the nuclear war of fallout. And he talks about how all of the details are unclear. And obviously, this particular document did not have any good consequences. But if it had a better president, like a sort of better president behind it, someone more like Abraham Lincoln, then perhaps it would have. Which is just, it's amusing to me, right? The idea of this guy collecting all of this stuff, but his entire view of American history is everything peaked at Lincoln. And so everything before that was leading to Lincoln, and everything after that was, like, diminished by the absence of Lincoln. It's just a funny way of looking at history.
It's like Marvel Cinematic Universe fan fiction. It's like getting on Twitter and then seeing like 1,000 people talk about how Marvel movies have revolutionized cinema in 1,000 different ways. And that's exactly how I feel about this. I look at it and I go, yep, that's a way of warping the world around the thing that you want to that you want to be true.
Yep.
That's fun though. Yeah, yeah. I didn't check that out. I just got his quest from him.
Yeah. Well, and his quest, he you talk to him and he'll be like, hey, you know, I got all this cool stuff. What if I had another cool thing? And that cool thing was the Declaration of Independence. Go to the National Archives and get it, please.
And this is where what we talked about last episode of like having to walk all the way around the city and walk through raider camps and all that kind of stuff. This is where we were going.
Although, but first, did you get like Abraham Washington's entire history of what the Declaration of Independence is?
No, I did not.
So similarly to his write-ups of other documents, except without the Lincoln stuff, he gives you like the context, like the historical context of the Declaration of Independence. And it's just like totally wrong, right? He was like, it was written in 1783, and then Paul Revere took it across the sea to presumably by airplane, or like it was the Second Judgmental Congress is what he calls it. The Second Judgmental Congress wrote the Declaration of Independence in 1783, and then Paul Revere transported it presumably by airplane to King George III. So it's just, again, right, it's amusing in the way that you called the world behind Fallout, or at least the world behind Fallout 3, like a Mad Magazine universe. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly that sort of thing, right? Just like the stupidest stuff possible is being uttered by these characters. And then I set out through the wasteland and through all these raider camps and so on and so forth to get to the National Archives.
When you get there, this is yet another, you know, we were talking about the library quest in last episode, Arlington Public Library. And that was a little bit of a different kind of quest in that, you know, you were following Brotherhood of Steel people around. This is similarly weird, I think. So you get in there and there's a woman named Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, hey, Buster, there's a bunch of super mutants coming. Help me out. And so, like, the first thing you do in here is this little mini quest where you are, like, defending the archive from these mutants.
Mm-hmm.
I just threw a bunch of grenades at the door, and they all blew up.
I went in, I didn't talk to her, and, like, totally ignored her, because I saw that there were a bunch of landmines on the ground, and I started walking around deactivating landmines, because Like, when I see there are landmines on the ground, I'm like, I don't want to walk into these goddamn landmines.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just ignoring her, deactivating all these landmines, and then all of these super mutants bust in and start shooting us. And I'm like, ah, hell, so I got to fight these super mutants. And then I do that.
So I misunderstood. So once she, once you finish this whole thing, she says, hey, it kind of looks like Abraham Washington sent you on the exact same mission he sent me on. Let's get the Declaration of Independence. Let's hang out together and let's get it, and then we'll split the reward. And I said, all right, sounds good. And she says, okay, cool. I found a secret elevator that takes us right down into the bottom of the thing. Let's use that. I did not understand what she was saying. I thought she was saying there's an elevator on this level, not there's an elevator literally right in front of us. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's important for what comes next, which is when I wandered around the entirety of this facility, clearing the whole thing of super mutants and centaurs and all this stuff, looking for the elevator that I could not find. That was, in fact, right in front of me in the middle of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much a National Treasure style elevator.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, hidden in the ground. And as I was doing that, unfortunately, there's a lot of traps in here. There's a lot of, like, I forget kind of what they're called, but, you know, there's like a rope with something heavy on it, and it swings down and it hits you, like mm-hmm. a pendulum. A lot of those, and Sydney was swallowing me. She's got her own special, like, 10mm machine gun, very Ian from Fallout 1 kind of vibes going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we were running around, and she was doing great. She's, like, annihilating these super mutants, and eventually she stopped swallowing me. And I was like, what's going on? And so I had to walk back. I walked slowly through all of these different rooms and areas we'd been in, and I found her dead, smashed by one of these traps.
Alas.
Alas. Sadly. But I say it was a little bit different in concept, both because of that defending thing at the beginning, and also that she's like your companion character for a little while here, which is really interesting. There's not really a lot of companion stuff in this game.
Yeah, you'll notice probably by this point that Eleanor, who in the past has been the companion happy character in these playthroughs, has really been solo throughout the entire game thus far, because there is one companion character you can pick up in Megaton, and you have to be evil.
Really?
And that is it's Jericho. He's like a former Enclave soldier. So if you have positive karma, he will not join up with you. Hmm. And that's the only companion character we have encountered in the game, sort of like full-time companion character, because Sydney is, she will only be your companion for this quest. Like you, well, not really like you, I understood what she was saying, that there was an elevator in that room. My issue, in sort of the same way that I had my own priorities with the frag mines, I didn't care. I had other goals, which was, I want experience. I want to level up. Eleanor wants to be powerful. So I go through and clear out this level of the archives, and similarly, like, Sydney gets exploded by a super mutant or something.
R.I.P.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.S. No. Well, wow, what? Rest in Sydney. That's
what I was like, rest in space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rest in space. L.I.S. But yeah, so we go down. I mean, this isn't... It's interesting that the beginning of this is interesting, the middle is not interesting, and the end is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the middle is really you're just walking around in like the steam tunnels beneath this place, fighting robots.
Yeah,
because there's a security system. And we are hearing over the intercom someone being like, your independence is being threatened. Rise up. Blah, blah, blah. It's this like rousing speech that's going on. What did you think was happening there?
Well, it's interesting because it you would almost think that because we know that DC was invaded by the end of the war, right? There, mm-hmm. like China had invaded, right? There, you almost think like, oh, did something get set? Like, is this automated, first of all, but is it automated for the actual war, right? Like, was there some commander or something who had prepared all of these pep talks for some soldiers that had holed up in the National Archives, and the security system has misrecognized us as an invading force, right? That was sort of my initial thought.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. I was like, oh, this is like a weird like post-death recording from someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's been captured forever and she's playing, and so these robots are on the defensive forever.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case?
No, it is not. As I've already mentioned, I have a hard time with robots, so I just stealthed and went all the way to the end of this location and went through some doors into like the, I don't know, the National Archive bunker or whatever. And there is a robot in a old-timey suit and a powdered wig named Button Gwinnett, who is here to from our own Georgia.
Mm-hmm. From the in one of the signers, of course.
Uh-huh.
Huge mistake not adding Button Gwinnett into Hamilton, of course. I cannot believe that Lin-Manuel Miranda looked at all of the founding fathers and said, gosh, do you know who doesn't get enough credit? Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Huge mistake. Should have been Button Gwinnett. We should have had to really reconcile with the legacy of Button Gwinnett, as we're all doing every day here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Such a big deal. But yeah, the seeing this robot in a powdered wig and a suit, A+. It's the best image in the game so far.
It's very good.
And I think this whole thing's pretty good. So yeah, this robot, Button Gwinnett, says, hey, I'm a founding father. I'm a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Number one. Point number one, with a bullet at the top. I'm literally Button Gwinnett. Mm-hmm. Number two, we need the Declaration of Independence. You cannot have it. Mm-hmm. It's an important document for us, the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And he's got two big old turrets that say, hey, do not mess with me.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you do here, Mike?
Well, another thing that you should note is that he also keeps calling you a redcoat.
He does.
So he does not understand like the actual war that was happening. To him, we're still fighting this weird version of the Revolutionary War. I had a speech option here that I was successful in. I told him, calm down. I'm Thomas Jefferson. And I'm here to take the. I'm here to save the Declaration of Independence.
That's amazing.
it's very funny.
That's very good because yeah, he seems to believe that he is literally the historical figure.
Mm-hmm.
He does not believe he's a robot playing a role. Well, how did that go for you?
Oh, he's like, oh, sir, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you. may I ask what you're going to do with the Declaration of Independence? And you can tell him, like, I'm going to transport it to King George. I'm going to, like, take it to the State House or something. Or I'm going to deliver it to the new president of the United States, Abraham Washington. I told him I was going to take it to the State House. And he was like... So the State House still stands? Then the stars and stripes truly are forever. And he hands over the Declaration of Independence. No problem.
Well, in classic Fallout fashion, I had nothing to do other than hit this robot with a hammer, which I did.
Oh, well.
Mm-hmm. Did you loot not just off of his body, but from the... He has his own custom... Revolutionary era furniture behind him. I don't know if you saw that.
I've never seen
this furniture anywhere else in the game.
Yeah, no, it's like a special little like desk and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's funny because it's like you're like looking. It's like marked as like Button Gwinnett's like liquor cabinet or something. And you open it up, and it's just filled with like microfusion cells.
Yes. One is like his supplies cabinet and the other one is his like wardrobe or whatever.
Yeah.
And in the wardrobe, he has an additional powdered wig. So
yeah.
Hopefully you got that and equipped it immediately.
I think I took it. I did not equip it because I am not sure if it will take off my glasses. And I like Eleanor in her glasses.
Mm.
But she needs those to see.
Yep.
Even though she didn't live with them until she like looted her first pair off of someone. The sort of things that I should talk about with this Button Gwinnett character, I'll talk about the lighter stuff first. Mm-hmm. Did you go into the room off to the side?
Yes, because you can use it to leave that way.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So you're in this like bunker with like period appropriate furniture in it and all this kind of stuff. And you open the side door and it is a massive like space age hangar. of all of the founding fathers.
Yeah, and they're all like, they're all Protectron robots.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were like the, and you can read some terminals here, that these were like the historical reenactment robots that were being used in the National Archive for some reason.
Right.
And one of them is broken because you can start it up and it only plays the radio.
Yeah, the thing talks about a couple different broken robots, but I don't remember any of the specifics there. So yeah, I really love that. I love that, like, Button Gwinnett is there and you're like, this is really weird. And you open up the store and you're like, no, it could be so much weirder. Like, theoretically, all these other robots, like Benjamin Franklin is roaming the wasteland out there, just doing stuff. I thought that was great.
Yeah, no, I like that. So the weird thing about Gwinnett is, you'll recall that I told him I was Thomas Jefferson. Because I did that, he, you know, hands over the Declaration of Independence, and then he's like, well, what do I do now? Right. What are my orders now? And I'm like, you know, stand down. You deserve a rest. And he's like, yes, no, thank you. I do deserve a rest. And because I do this, all of the other robots out in the tunnels de-aggro me, and they're just patrolling now. But just before Gwinnett goes to sleep, he says, and sir, give my regards to Sally. Which, of course, is a joke. I use that term fairly loosely, scare quotes there, about Thomas Jefferson's relationship with Sally Heming, who was someone who was enslaved by him. And I feel like this is interesting because it is such a perfect index of like where we were. I'm speaking, you know, understand who I'm saying we there, like we white Americans or like general Americans were thinking and talking about the issue of Sally Heming in 2008. Or it's just like, yeah, did you know that Thomas Jefferson like totally had sex with one of his slaves? And I think in the past 12 years, it has been more pressed upon the popular narrative that when you are an enslaved person, that's not a good situation in general. And like a founding father, like sleeping with one of his slaves is not exactly funny. Right. It's not like give my regards to Sally. Right. Like it's a mismatch.
Yeah, there's a way that it was treated at one point, and certainly the way that I took it. Or not took it, but was like taught it, right?
Uh-huh.
Or the way it was brought up to me, which was like the founding fathers, while owning slaves, it was just way more complicated than you might think.
Yeah.
You know, they had children, you know what I mean? Like, and that was not a, that was more of a, I mean, certainly in the American South, right? That got treated as a, you see, slavery was more complicated. It wasn't just the domination of one people by another people. They had children. I mean, what do you do about that?
Right.
No, we couldn't have been that racist. And as you're saying, right, I think we've had a much more robust national conversation now about how there is no such thing as, for example, consent or free will under a condition of slavery.
Right.
Right. All decisions are compromised and all actions are compromised by the infinite and ontological violence that is chattel slavery. And so I don't feel like that would be a joke that you would make in this era, although, you know, there's a 50-50 shot that we're going to see one of those in Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Like just a pure 50-50.
And so then there's another sort of interesting thing that happens here that's much lighter in tone in some ways. The other thing that Gwinnett says to me, he's like, you know, I believe you said it yourself best, sir, that, and he quotes Thomas Jefferson, presumably to me, we in America do not have government by the majority, but the majority who participate. And a couple of things here. One is that this quote makes no sense. And I don't just mean that in terms, I mean, it the quote itself, right, the statement makes sense, right? You could unpack that and be like, yeah, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the people who are like going out and voting or whatever, if that's the sort of ideology you want to bring to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense that I am being told this by this robot. I'm not really sure if there's actually a joke here or if this is just like if it's supposed to be funny because it doesn't fit.
Well, I think it's supposed to be funny because it's like a logic about like the man of action, right? Mm. Like you're a protagonist. The people who participate in a Fallout game is the protagonist. And that's it.
So here's the other funny thing about this quote. I looked it up because I was like, this is weird. Why in the hell? Like, why is this being said? Where does this come from? According to Monticello.org, Monticello, of course, being the Thomas Jefferson. Like Monticello is Thomas Jefferson's like old estate, and they you
his
know,
plantation.
Yeah, his plantation. Like the they keep a sort of database of like various Jefferson quotes. They have this one listed. It is spurious. It is not real.
Oh.
Now here's where it gets even better. They have because they're Monticello.org, they do their research. They date this quote to the first time in print in. Do you want to guess the year?
It could be so recent. Or it could... is it from this Fallout game?
It's not.
Okay.
But here's where I have outmaneuvered Monticello.org. They date it to 2009, the year after Fallout. Because they find it...
Oh, my God!
They find it in the earliest instance in... This is so funny. In a copy of Rent to Own magazine from March of 2009. Rent to Own magazine, the trade magazine for rent to own professionals. And there's an entire issue of this magazine that is about something called the Consumer Rental Purchase Agreement Act that is all about... I tried looking up this particular bit of legislation and couldn't find something that matched the name precisely, but it's just this entire issue of this magazine walking through this bit of legislation on rent-to-own operations and sort of explaining like the legalese of the bill in plain language for, I don't know, whatever a rent-to-own professional is. And one of the little like, you know, it's got all of like the graphic design on this magazine, by the way, is incredible. Like the cover is George W. Bush's face with like an American flag like painted over it.
Cool.
And then there are all of these like eagles and flags and stuff inside the magazine itself, because this is on Google Books. You can look this up.
Right.
And that Thomas Jefferson quote from this Fallout game gets put in as like a big pull quote in one of the pages of this magazine.
I cannot believe this. So this quote is fake and it comes from this Fallout game. This is someone in a magazine ripping off Fallout.
Yes, right. So someone who was making the Rent to Own magazine, the trade magazine for rent to own professionals, is pulling this quote out of Fallout 3. And from there, and now if you look up this quote, it's on, you know, like Brainy Quotes and like all of the quote sites. So this game appears to have like fabricated a false Thomas Jefferson quote.
Oh my God. Well, Monticello.org, you need to get your shit together.
Yep.
That's amazing. Oof. I thought it, for sure it was going to be about the Three-Fifths Compromise.
No. Oh, God, no.
But, right, think about the quote in relationship to that. That's 100% what it sounds like.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I took it back to Abraham Washington. He was very happy to receive it. Got some experience. I think he got some money.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we get that Abraham Lincoln hat? Has that happened yet?
No. It could be a part of his quest. Like, that's one of the ones that I happen to remember. It's like a quest line that you can navigate among, like, I think two or three factions. And he is one of them.
Okay. Gotcha. I want that hat. Gotta get that hat.
But yeah.
Anything else happened for you here in Rivet City?
No, not really. That was kind of the end of my adventures for this round.
Well, so I think in the next episode, I also did not go to the Jefferson Memorial, this next kind of piece of mm-hmm. the main quest. In the next episode, we will be doing the next major quest in the main quest line.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on twitter.com at warrenisdead.
You can go to twitter.com/rangetouch to figure out everything we are up to. You can go to patreon.com/rangetouch and support us for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month, you get access to a newsletter that we put out. This just kind of let you know everything we did that month. At $3 a month, you get our notes for Game Study Study Buddies. You also get access to a podcast feed, a secret podcast feed for this very show, Too Much Future, in case you don't want to listen to it on YouTube. And at $5 a month, you get the Range Touch monthly podcast, which we've been doing for a long time, Danny and I, and you get access to bonus episodes to our show, Just King Things. And this all is on top of all the cool free stuff we put out, which is Game Study Study Buddies, where Michael and I read books of academic game studies and make them accessible for everyone, hopefully. Just King Things, where we are reading the works of Stephen King in publication order, which is a wild thing to do, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of the Let's Plays. We got an Elsinore Let's Play going on youtube.com/rangetouch. We've got Danny archiving his Crusader King streams up there. All kinds of cool stuff going on. So rad stuff. If you enjoy anything we do here at Range Touch, think about throwing a couple bucks our way. Helps us cover web hosting and allows us to spend a bunch of time on this every month. So thank you if you already support us. Michael, what's the catchphrase for the show?
Until next time, folks, war never changes, but Fallout sure does. Everything changed.